Hello, and welcome to the Book Smarts podcast, where we talk about publishing data and technologies and send you away with some insights that will help you sell more books. I'm your host, Joshua Talent. This week on the Book Smarts podcast, I'm talking with Victoria Sutherland, who is the founder publisher of Forward Magazine. Victoria, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here, Josh.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I'd love to share with our audience what Forward Magazine does and talk a little bit about the work that you're doing in the publishing world. So why don't we start off actually, but give a little bit of your background. How long have you been working in publishing? You obviously have been working at Forward for a long time because you founded it. So what's your background, and also what does Forward Magazine do?
Sure. I have a degree from Michigan State University in communications, and I started off selling advertising space for some regional trade magazines and lifestyle magazines early in my career, and fell into publishing because there was a packager in the town that I live who bought Small Press Magazine, which was started by Publishers Weekly in the early 90s, I think. Was bought by Britt Bell and his wife, which ran a small publisher out of Rhode Island. And the wife died unexpectedly, and they were selling Small Press Magazine. And so the packager that I worked for asked if I would like to come on board and help them sell ads and be the publisher of that magazine. And I saw it was a great opportunity to really start focusing on independent presses. The publishing industry had been tepidly watching self-publishers, with the onset of desktop computers. And but there had been some more established publishers around for the 10 or 15 years prior to that. And there wasn't a good resource for small presses to get recognized. And Small Press Magazine was doing great reviews and a trusted source for librarians and booksellers on which books to pick up for their stacks. The person I was working for took Small Press Magazine in a direction that I didn't think was good long term. And so a couple of other women editors and I decided to start our own publication when he rejected our offer to purchase Small Press Magazine. And that's when Forward was born. It was 1998, April 1st. We packed up our computers from home and walked them down the street to a little office space above an ice cream shop. And as I'm sure many small presses have started on sawhorses with old doors put on top. One of our first purchases was a fax machine, and that's how we let people know back then that we were open for business. That's awesome. Ann Stanton and Marty Link were my two co-founders. But after a little while, they decided just to pursue some other interests. And I'm not sure if that was, the stress of running a business. And I was the only one who actually refinanced my house to make sure that we stayed in business. And so that's, in a nutshell, how I ended up being the only owner of the publication. But I feel like we came at a great time. Not very many independent presses were getting coverage in the regular trade magazines. And so we just went with it. We were monthly at first, went down to quarterly. Now we're bi-monthly, but we are, I like to call myself a media company. We have a digital publication for people who prefer that. We also have marketing services for people editing and representation at some trade shows overseas. Our whole mission was to provide an opportunity for independent presses to have the same sort of level playing field that the larger houses were, in a cooperative sort of situation. And that's been the premise of our success, I think.
That's great. That's an interesting story. And it's obviously the independent publishing has grown tremendously since you started Forward Magazine. So what have you seen as trends in the last couple of years in the way that independent publishers are handling marketing and reviews and these kinds of things?
Well, in terms of marketing, I think a lot of pressure is being put on social media to help them sell books. I'm still standing by the side of the road watching to see what happens, because I'm not sure I think it's driving consumers to books that they might not have otherwise heard. Mm-hmm. But I always felt like the trade was still worthwhile reaching out to. I mean, bookstores and librarians are setting the tone for culture in their communities. They're places for gathering, and they're the ones who are recommending books to read to their patrons. And so a 300 copy sale from a large library in Houston or Los Angeles is still a big deal to me. Yeah. So while I do see a lot of independent presses trying to focus on some social media, I hope they don't dump all of their monies or efforts into that, because I think that it's a nice complement to what they do to the trade as well. It's got to be the whole package. In terms of reviews, I mean, it really reviews are a commodity now in terms of the world, restaurants and hotels and airline services and books. Everybody wants to see a review of the product or the book or whatever it is, the place that they're staying or the restaurant they're going to before they make a decision. And so the value of reviews continues to only increase in my mind. And we do long form reviews, which is different from some of the other trade journals. They mostly do small annotations or about 100 words and recommend the book or don't recommend the book. But we feel like since the beginning, we've put a lot of money into, or we've invested in paper quality and white space and making sure that the magazine was a piece of art, and as well as the words, you know, in the reviews being something that they can enjoy for, you know, on their coffee table or on their train ride home or, you know, for a little bit longer than just a resource that they have at their desk at work.
Yeah. I think your point about marketing is really well made, that, you know, there's a lot of focus on certain types of marketing, like you said, you know, social media and things like that, but only a certain percentage of the population is going to engage with that. There's still a need for other types of outreach to people and visibility of your books or any other product, honestly, in front of the eyes of people, and different types of people engage in different ways. So yeah, I think that point is really well made, and something that a lot of independent publishers that I've talked to are just not understanding. So it's good to know that there's other voices saying that's an important piece of this.
One of our recent endeavors was putting a conference together at the American Library Association this year called Library Insight Summit. And it was a gathering of librarians from across the country and the Chicago area to talk about what they look for in books and book review, you know, and book reviews are still really key for them. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're seeing this too. The metadata in their NetGalley and Edelweiss and all the accounts is also very important. So I guess my recommendation is to just really figure out who your target market is and make sure that those people are getting, you know, if you want it to be people the consumers who are shopping at bookstores and patronizing libraries, then make sure that the librarians and booksellers know about your book.
Yeah, that's important. So with Forward, how many reviews do you typically have in a magazine? And what you said, there's obviously, you know, white space, you're trying to make it long form and something more readable, that obviously also limits the number of reviews you could do in the same space. So what do you take as your approach to that in publishing the magazine?
I'm not going to speak on behalf of my editor-in-chief, Michelle Shingler, but I've heard her say this a number of times. We're trying to make sure that some underserved voices are being heard in terms of diversity and LGBTQ and authors who might not, who are publishing in categories that are not very common. But we also have to make sure that we're satisfying their interest in what is coming from more established presses as well. Fiction and nonfiction, about 125 per issue, so it's not very many. We have category close-ups that are genre-specific in each issue, and we always include graphic novels and children's picture books as well. Those aren't quite as long as the long-form reviews, but those are hot topics for librarians especially. who are trying to make sure that the graphic novels are age appropriate and the children's books. There's so many coming out. We want to make sure that they're getting a good offering from independent presses. We also do poetry, which is not very commonly covered in trade magazines anymore, but we feel strongly about the art of poetry. And so we want to make sure that that is getting some recognition and appreciating the presses who continue to publish poetry. We're also spending a lot of time doing translations and introducing some great works from overseas to American markets. The key is they have to have some distribution set up in the United States. It's important for our librarians and booksellers to make sure that they can easily order the books from it and get it on their shelves.
Yeah. So what's the process then? Working with publishers and working with authors or anybody else, what's the process that people go through to submit a book for review potentially or that whole thing?
We require, because we make sure that reviewers read the book 3 to 4 months in advance of the publication date. So right now we're looking at November. Actually, I think the deadline is passed for our November, December issue. And we're looking at January, February publication dates. Mm-hmm. We will take submissions. Since COVID, most of the trade magazines are taking submissions via digital file, which makes things a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. She would appreciate a tip sheet or a sell sheet attached to the book submission that will help her very quickly figure out, make sure that the ISBN is there, see what the pub date is, get an idea of what the book is about and see if it fits in her, spreadsheet of what we have to cover that month. Mm-hmm. And then she'll spend some time looking through the book and making sure that the writing, because we only review books that we can recommend to libraries. We don't want to include a book that isn't going to meet our standards. And sometimes the reviewer will send the book back and say, I don't think that this is something that you guys should cover. And we say, okay, thank you for letting us know and pay them a reader's fee. But we, unfortunately, because we're so small, we don't have a tracking system for publishers to watch their book go through our system. But mm-hmm. if your book is chosen for review, we do let the publisher know, because at that time we'll start getting cover art and making sure that the reviewer has all the resources that they need to make a good judgment of the book.
Yeah.
Then we have a layer, 3 layers of editing and a couple of layers of editing after the magazine is laid out. So unfortunately, a lot of people are a little bit upset about the timeframes that we have with trade publishing, but librarians and booksellers are insistent on having information prior to the publication date so that any publicity that happens once you get the book released on radio or interviews and newspapers and things, when the consumers are coming to the store, they've got it ready on the shelves or in the libraries, and they don't, they haven't, they're like, not, where is this book? I've never heard of it before. They have heard of it.
Right. So a little bit of an order of operations that just needs to be in place. Yeah. That makes sense.
Most established publishers have us on their galley list. Mm-hmm. we automatically get everything that they come out with. As you may or may not know, or may or may not want to talk about, we are the company that originated a fee-for-review service in 2001. That was about 3 years after we opened our doors. Mm-hmm. And it was simply because we were getting so many submissions of great books that we couldn't cover in the magazine because we were limited by space, that we said, why aren't we giving these people a chance to get their book reviewed? Because we know how important it is to the trade. If they pay us for our services. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of uproar in the industry when that happened. But I try not to smile too much when I see that all of our competitors who were giving us the hardest time are now all doing fee-for-review services. And here's the most important factor of that fee-for-review service or any trade reviews. We all license our reviews to the wholesale databases where librarians and booksellers shop. Mm-hmm. So Bowker, Baker & Taylor, Ingram's, iPage, Cengage, EBSCO, dozens more all receive our reviews in a data file once a month from us. And for instance, if a library patron comes in and says, you have 0 books on martial arts, and or nothing that's up to date. A librarian can go to the database at Ingram or Bowker or what have you, that wherever they shop, and call up the code, the BISATCH code, and all of the books that have been reviewed go to the top of the list. Mm-hmm. So your chances of getting your book bought are higher if your book has been reviewed by one of these trade publications that license the reviews to the trade. And for me, that's worth the fee in and of itself, just getting access into that database.
Yeah. So what percentage of the books that you review are paid review versus just a submission that someone sent in?
I think, in the magazine, they're all free. We only review books that have been submitted to us and those are no charge. Probably 70% of them are free and 30% of them are paid.
Yeah. And that makes sense especially if you're a smaller publisher and you don't have as many titles, or you're starting out and you think this title really, needs to get some visibility, it would make sense to try to get it to the top of the list and put some effort behind it.
That's right. And, especially because we didn't not choose your book because it wasn't very good. We just didn't have the space for it.
Right.
And so, in my dreams, I was imagining a publicity meeting happening every Monday morning and saying, this one, and this title got picked up by these trade publications last week. Let's pay for a review for these because they're just as important to us, and the price is, they need a review.
Yeah.
So whatever, people can take it or leave it. I have I'm not here to convince people that fee for reviews are where it's at. Mm-hmm. I think it fills a void, a service fills the void that was necessary. And because now, when we first started, there were only 55,000 titles coming from independent presses. It's millions now. Yeah. How do you get noticed for things like that? Plus, another option for this is if you're a first-time author publisher, which we deal with sometimes, and you're not quite sure how the trade is going to respond to your book, here's great feedback mm-hmm. on your manuscript before you even pay the money to have it printed. We're going to give you an idea of the development didn't happen very well. The editing, copy editing was bad. The copyright page isn't set up properly. So fix those mistakes before you go to press.
Yeah. That's great. And I think that's a really, like you said, with the number of independent presses, the number of independent titles that are being produced now, having those resources available and being able to get not just the feedback, but also to know that your book will now have that review and be able to show up higher in the list. It's obviously a kind of a no-brainer for a publisher who's
struggling. Yeah, anecdotally, a man from who had more. We don't review textbooks, but we did do a science book that had was a very obscure topic that we actually had a reviewer who could handle the subject matter do the book, and he came up to us at a trade show afterwards and said, nobody was touching my book until I paid for this review from you guys, and I got an order of 300 copies.
Wow.
Because it was reviewed. So that in and of itself was confirmation or affirmation for us to keep up with that side of the business.
That's
and
great.
Frankly, we just, it helps for all of us. It's a decent enough revenue stream that we have to keep it because the advertising dollars are drying up as we speak. And so in order to support a print publication, we need to have several streams of revenue coming in.
That makes sense. So to finish this out, I'm curious if you have any recommendations for publishers, independent publishers who are looking at, okay, we're approaching the market with a nude title. Maybe it's out of kind of the norm for us. And we're thinking about not just reviews, but maybe marketing or maybe, other things. What are some trends that you're seeing or some thoughts that you have that you would say, do this first? Here's the one or two things that I would recommend you do as an independent publisher to really make sure your book is successful.
The number one suggestion I have is that quality is always going to be king. I don't care how unique your subject matter is or how necessary it is. Librarians and bookstores and even readers are going to reject books that aren't well written. So mm-hmm. that's number one. Always, we have to keeping on with putting good books out. Mm-hmm. I would check in with libraries or podcasts or library listservs or bookstores and see what's, because we heard at our conference that young adult books are still very popular, you know, so try to publish books that the market wants, graphic novels, boys, books for boys that are like normal boys, boy books, we heard. Diverse titles that are written by diverse authors, not, I don't know how to say this kindly, white persons running publishing houses saying we have to put diverse books out. I mean, we want to give the diverse publishing population a chance to publish great books and get it into the marketplace too. What else? You know, I guess I just keep going back to quality. People are always going to, your book is going to resonate as long as the quality is good and they're not feeling like they're picking up something that isn't packaged perfect, you know, as professionally as it possibly could, including editing and design inside.
Yeah, that's good. 100% agree. So Victoria, thanks for taking some time to chat today. Where can people follow what you're doing online?
Well, our website is forwardreviews.com, F-O-R-E-W-O-R-D, like the forward of a book. You can't, you wouldn't believe how many times people misspell that. I'm on LinkedIn, and Forward also has Facebook and Twitter accounts. So forwardreviews.com will direct you to all of those.
Great. Yeah, we'll put links in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for your time.
That's it for this episode of the Book Smarts podcast. If you like what you've heard, please leave a review or rating in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. And also, please share the podcast with your colleagues. If you have topic suggestions or feedback about the show, you can email me at joshua@firebrandtech.com. Thanks for joining me and getting smarter about your books.